This is an interview with Chris Barber about The Old Fool in Forest of Dean Morris, recorded by Alicia Cotton.
This is Alicia. I'm with Chris. It's the 6th of June 2023, and we're recording for the Making Mischief project. So first of all, Chris, can you just tell me a little bit about your background?
Well, I've, for as long as I've ever been able to remember anything, I've always been interested in folk music. When I lived up in Lancashire for the first 18 years of my life, I got involved with folk clubs and the like, but never did anything to do with Morris dancing, other than I was in Clitheroe Folk Club one night when a guy stuck his hand up and said, "I want to start a Morris side, anybody interested?" I stuck my hand up, and 2 weeks later I left home. So I never, that's as far as it got. Until I moved down to the Forest of Dean and got married, and my wife met one of her fellow ladies who had small children, babies, and she said, "Do you think Chris would like to be a Morris dancer?" And Ruth said, "I'll ask him," and the rest is history.
Brilliant.
So I started dancing, but that was back in the 80s.
So where do you think your, because you said even back in Lancashire you were
that,
interested.
Yes,
where do you think that came from then, your interest?
I don't know, but I've no idea, because my family weren't into it, but I was, and I think I was influenced by the band Steel Eye Span, because they were very big back in the 60s, and it just grabbed me. The music grabbed me, and they did an album called Morris On, and I heard it. I thought, this is brilliant music. I just loved it. But it's finding the right, it's being in the right place at the right time to start doing it, and that didn't happen till I was in my 30s, and that was when I was in the Forest of Dean.
So are you a musician yourself then?
I play a bit.
A little bit, dabble.
I play a bit, yeah.
It was interesting that you came at it from the music.
I came at it, I don't read music. I can't read music. I've tried. I'm too lazy. But I've got a good ear, and if I can make a sound on a musical instrument, I can usually pretty quickly play a tune. Doesn't matter what it is. It really doesn't matter what it is. I mainly stringed instruments. I play mandolin. No, have done for the last 10 years or so.
Very cool.
Which is very nice.
Brilliant. So tell us a little bit more about your first connections with Forest of Dean Morris. Is that your first Morris?
It was my first experience of Morris, yes. Their particular style of Morris is called Cotswold Morris. Morris is there are several different styles of Morris, of which the main ones are Cotswold, Northwest Clog, Rapper Dancing, Sword Dancing, and Border Morris. There are other sub-genres within that, but those are the five main ones. The biggest of them all, by a long shot, probably is the Cotswold Morris. And their dances were based usually on the villages within a small area. The Forest of Dean Morris, as far as I understand, based their tradition on the Mitchell Dean. What was the Mitchell Dean? Was it Mitchell Dean or was it Ruardeen? It's Ruardeen, the Ruardeen tradition. And one of the guys, because there's always historians in these things, and there's always people that want to dig into the depths of it, and some people dig further than others, and eventually they manage to dig up enough to recreate as best they possibly could the Ruadine tradition. So that's now the mainstay of the Forest of Dean Morris. Mm. Notice I say Morris, Forest of Dean Morris, and not Forest of Dean Morris men.
Yeah, because it's not just men, is it?
Not now.
It's what I noticed on May Day when I was there, yeah.
Not now. It, when I was dancing, it was a male, it was male Morris. It was the Forest of Dean Morris men. Unfortunately, or fortunately, whichever way you want to look at it, things move on. And in order to survive as a side, they had to adapt, and their method of adapting, because they struggled attracting youngsters. The only youngsters that came in were the offspring of the dancers. What they did in the end, they said, right, well, women can come in, and there are probably now 50-50 females to males in the Forest of Dean. And that is echoed throughout. Probably there's very few sides now that are men only. One or two, I can think of a couple, but even then, they might not, the dancers might all be men, but they will have female musicians.
So is there often a divide then between... attracts a different kind of people.
Yeah, you've got to keep the thing going.
Yeah.
And that's that. And to be fair, that's one of the reasons why when I heard about you, I thought it's my contribution to keeping this thing going, because it's important, because for many, many, many years it was lost. And it wasn't until Cecil Sharp and a couple of other people, I think it was a woman called Maud Carpleys,
I'd be wrong
on that one, they went round, they were initially looking at the musicians or musical traditions within areas, and they accidentally came across Morris men, and they were dying on their feet, literally dying on their feet. And then that resurgence, that was back in the early 1900s. Early 1900s. And then it died again, sort of, until the late 50s, early 60s. And then there was what they call the second, I think that's the second wave. And I was probably influenced by that. Second wave.
So is that when Forest of Dean Morris, started?
Yes. Yeah. Well,
again?
they started. There was a guy called Dave Blick, who came from Bedford. He was a college lecturer, and he came over to the Forest to work at a college in the Forest of Dean. I can't remember which one it was now, but it was a college in the Forest of Dean. But they've all changed anyway. But he was already an established dancer back in Bedford. When he came to the Forest of Dean, he got involved with the Forest, with the folk club. In fact, it wouldn't surprise me if he actually started a folk club, because that's the guy, that's the way the guy was. Absolute dynamo. He's so much energy. He's only recently passed. He's only passed in the last 2 or 3 years. Not through COVID, through old age, but it was unfortunately COVID, because I think had we not have been locked down, there would have been a massive celebration for him. But he started it, and that was back in the late 60s, and it's from then to now, it's managed to keep going.
Yeah. So can you break down for me a little bit more about what the dancing at Forest of Dean, Cotswold style, what that involves, what the different people are doing?
Right, okay. Cotswold Morris, there are usually six dancers in a side, in a set, and one or more musicians. Usually one, sometimes more than one, but it's actually better when there's only one, because one musician will drive the set better than many musicians, because many musicians tend to race each other, whereas one musician drives it at a proper tempo, especially if you've got a good musician, which very fortunately when I started we had some excellent musicians. So you've got six men. There are three types of dances that I can think of. There are hanky dances, which is the one that most people associate Cotswold dancing with. There are stick dances. The stick dances are broken into long sticks and short sticks, one sticks and two sticks. And there are hand clapping dances, of which there are at least two hand clapping dances in the Forest of Dean tradition that I can think of.
Okay. So are they, what kind of, what's the music like that's happening? Oh. What instrument would that one?
Right, the instruments, traditionally they were very simple. They were pipe and tabor. And the pipe was a three-hole pipe, because you can only play it with one hand. So in order to get the requisite notes, you've got one pipe with three holes in it. And the tabor is a small drum that you do with the other hand. So the drum drives it and the music is played by the pipe. There are other types of other music is played on the melodeon, played on the piano accordion, played on the squeeze box, and I can't remember what that's called, but it'll come to me. Fiddle musicians, but if you go to Border Morris, they more or less have a full orchestra. They're crazy.
Mad.
They are absolutely mad. And they have 8 people usually in their sets, but they have trombones, drums, bass drums, melodeons, trumpets, clarinets. I mean, literally, they really
go all out.
They are mad. They are absolutely insane, but brilliant to watch.
Fantastic.
Brilliant to watch and fantastic to listen to. I think the nearest side, and I don't know if it's still going, we're up the Silurian men up in Hereford. But that's, so I've been out of it too long. I don't know if they're still around.
Mm. And is that, are the tunes that are played interchangeable between the different kinds of dances, or are there?
No, the tune is specific to a dance.
Okay.
So, but not being a Morris musician, I would just listen to whatever was being played and dance the way that the foreman of the side told me to dance. But a dance would be done to a tune.
Yeah.
If you did another dance, it would be done to another tune. So the tune and the dance were specific to each other.
Cool. So you were the fool.
I was.
What's that all about?
He is the Lord of Misrule. Quite frankly, he's there to attract an audience, he's there to keep the audience entertained between the dances, he's there to upset the dancers as much as he can without upsetting the dance. That sounds a little illogical, but it's very difficult to do. One of the best, I know some really good fools, and they can dance in and out of the sets without disturbing the dancers, but they add an element of danger. Quite frankly, that's what they do. They add an element of danger to the dance, so it's you never know where they're going to be at any one time. The dancers have to know that the fool knows what he's doing. And if he doesn't, it just becomes a mess. If he does it right, it really enhances the dance. And I was a fool. I'm not one to blow my own trumpet, but some say that I was a very good fool. I've got a badge for it, I know that.
Brilliant. asked to see that later.
I'll show you that on my coat.
So does the fool interact with the audience as well?
Yes, he does.
Is there a bit of that?
Yes, he does. Some more than others. There are some fools who are not dancing fools. They might have been dancers back in their youth, but there's a lot of old fools out there. But an old fool isn't a bad fool. An old fool is somebody who's survived. And they will go around the audience. They will be asked questions by the audience, such that you're asking now. So you have to have a certain amount of knowledge. Sometimes you make it up, but I'm not at this particular point in time, to the best of my knowledge anyway. But they will also carry the collecting box and collect money, and a good fool can collect a lot of money if he's clever. There are other fools that actually carry cake, believe it or not. They will go around. They will go around with cake. Anything to attract an audience, because the bigger the audience, the more money's collected. Because again, back in the day, the dancers would go out to earn money to allow them to enjoy the evening. This is back in the day. I'm not saying they do that nowadays. I mean, to be fair, the Morris that I've been involved with, they've contributed a lot to charities, but that's an incidental. That's not why they're there. They're there to dance. That's what it's all about.
So what's the, obviously with the revivals that have happened, this might have changed, but what was Morris dancing for at first?
There are as many answers as there are people you can ask the question of. There is, I think, in Cheltenham Town Hall, a huge painting. And there's a very tiny depiction of a Morris side somewhere within the Cotswolds, and it's all to do with the gathering of the harvest. There are also stories of the Morris bringing, at the beginning of planting, which is a bit like the May Day, because that once upon a time, people didn't used to start planting until early in the year, and the Morris would be asked to go out, and it's paganistic in a way, but that's not paganistic in a bad way. That's non-Christian, it's all to do with fertility. It's all to do with the harvest. It's all to do with the general well-being of the countryside. It attracts people gather together at markets and the like. So it's Morris is steeped in this country's history. I wished it was appreciated better for that, rather than ridiculed.
It's about people, isn't it?
Yes.
Very good. So, let's get on to the costumes.
Right. Okay. Again, there are as many different costumes as there are Morris sides. I can tell you best about the Forrester Dean, because that's the one I'm most familiar with. They have white shirts, they have black breeches, white socks, they have bells round their ankles, round their shins. I'll show you brought my bells with me. And they wear what is termed as a rag jacket. We call it a rag jacket. Other sides call them tatter jackets, but we call them rag jackets, and basically it's a shirt that you miss it. Your wife has cut the sleeves off and spent hours sewing other bits of cloth to that shirt, and they're all different because everybody's got different coloured cloth in their house. So I started off with a rag jacket before I became the fool. Having said that, I think I only danced half a dozen times as a non-fool. I had a bloodless coup. We did have a fool, but his heart wasn't in it. And then when I came along, they said, "Chris, will you be the fool?" I said, "Yes, I'd love to be. I have the personality that lent itself for that."
So is it just the set that wear those rag jackets?
No, they all, everybody, the musician, well, depends whether you've got a dancing musician or not. If you have a dancing musician, then he will wear a rag jacket because it's a pain in the neck, change it. So the musicians don't always wear, in fact, thinking about it, they don't wear the same as the dancers. They will wear anything they like. They'll wear quite posh clothes in some cases. Some people will wear clean shirts on a good day. If you've got a dancing musician, and when I was dancing with the Forrester Dean back in the 80s and early 90s, we had dancing musicians. So we would have a musician who would play for a couple, and then he'd want to dance, so then they'd swap and change. So they very, very often they had their musicians wore the same as the side. Nowadays they tend not to, because the guy who does most of the music for the Forrester Dean, he's not a dancer, he's a musician, a damn fine musician as well.
So are each costume specific to the type of Morris? Is it Cotswold that wear the rag jackets, or is it...
No, funnily enough, the rag jacket you will see in Cotswold, you will see it in Border. The other types of Morris are sword dancing and rapper dancing. A rapper is a short sword that's got a swivel handle on one side. I've never done it. I've watched it many times, and it's just mind blowing how they you've got to see it. I can't describe it. You've got to watch it. You've got to look it up on Google. Google it, find it on YouTube. It's phenomenal. I've danced in places where there with some of the best rapper dancers in this country, and they're just amazing. Sword dancers, they look like the same thing, but they're about a yard long, and we have a side. There'll be a side down this weekend. We've been virtually every family weekend that the Forrester Dean have ever held. That they're from Southport. Those dances mainly come from the Northern Isles of Scotland, but again, I will stand corrected on that. That's my understanding, because when they're telling you what the dances are, they seem to have, again from memory, they have the Northern Isles of Scotland seems to be where the music comes from. They wear jackets, waistcoats, long trousers usually. They don't tend to wear bells. They wear flat shoes because of the type of foot movements. It's not bouncy at all. It's not flat, it's not bouncy. I mean, Morris, Cotswold Morris is bouncy. It's not hopping, it's not skipping, it's 1-2-3 hop. And that was the one thing that was drilled into me the first night I turned up, that they said, right, the first thing you got to do is the 1-2-3 hop. Fortunately, I got it within 10 minutes. We had people, they had one guy there who'd been with the side 7 or 8 years, and he couldn't 1-2-3 hop to save his life. So you've got the, and then you've got Northwest Clog, and that is what it says. They wear clogs. But they also wear bells on the clogs. They also more or less have full orchestras. They have trombones, they have melodeons, they have big bass drums, they have snare drums, they have eight men in a side. There's one of the best sides you'll ever see anywhere, or Saddleworth Morris. They have their own festival in August, which is a cracking festival. They have people from all over the country going to theirs. That's at the Saddleworth Rush Cart. But tick that one, because you really want to look that one up. They've had at least two documentaries on the television.
Very interesting. I'll look that up.
Absolutely. Yeah. That is one. If you've not seen it, they are phenomenal.
Yeah.
They are phenomenal.
So what's the purpose of the bells then? Because bells noise, come up noise. Quite a lot. It's as much noise as possible.
It's as much noise as possible. It's attracting. It attracts people. The first thing you will ever hear. The first thing whenever you go, when Morris men are around, even if they're walking, you'll hear the bells, and the bells will attract people. What's the bells going on? So they'll follow the bells. Hopefully they will stop when they start dancing. And unless somebody can tell me a different reason, I can't think of another reason why you should want to wear bells. It's just a noise. It attracts people, such as noise. And the more bells you've got, the more noise you make, the more people you attract.
So the fool, back to him again.
The fool, yes.
Back to him. What does he wear?
Well, again, every different fool has a different costume. The one that is traditional to the Forest of Dean was top hat and tails. Mm. And that's, I managed through my wonderful mother-in-law, who knew a lot of people at church up in Yorkshire, she managed to get me two tailor-made, but not tailor-made for me, tailor-made by some worthy gentleman. A top hat. I didn't get the top hat from them. The first top hat I made, my missus made out of a bowler hat and a cornflake packet, which was the. I'll show you the photograph of it. If I show you a photograph, it'll come out well on the tape.
Always does a photo on it.
Yeah.
On a recording.
Does that tell you?
Oh, fantastic. That's a cornflake packet.
That's the hat I've got there. That was my Mark II version. I'll show you my Mark I version. There's my Fool's badge.
Oh, brilliant. That's great.
I had to spend a whole weekend to earn that.
Right, for the sake of the recording, the photo you just showed me of you in your top hat, can you just describe that photo for me?
Okay, right, I've got a top hat, my original top hat, because I couldn't find a proper top hat, was a bowler hat where my wife cut a cornflake packet, made it into a tube, put a top on it, covered it in felt, and then she put garlands around it, and I have feathers sticking out of it. Eventually I found a top hat that wasn't black, it was grey, but it meant it was a proper top hat. So I transferred the garlands, and I had two fox's tails that I acquired from somewhere. And then on top of that I have a tails jacket. The tails jacket, my wife put a ribbon round the cuff and the colour of and in one of the greens, because the green depicts the Forest of Dean. And eventually it became full of badges, which meant it weighed a ton, but, you know, hey. So it's full of badges. Then underneath that I have a rag waistcoat, which was a waistcoat she made, and then sewed rags to it. Under that I have my breeches, which came to the knee, the bells at the knee, and then white socks, and black shoes. And yeah, now I'm looking at it, it just makes me smile. I'm thinking, what the heck was I doing? Because that weighed a ton.
Where do the badges come from then?
When you go to visit other sides, because that's part of Morris is the community, and you go to other people, other sides, festivals, you go to, we were lucky, we didn't just go to other Morris side festivals, we actually went to festivals in France, we've been to festivals in Germany, and one of the things, whenever you go to a festival, you collect badges, and you put your badges on your jacket, or at least I did. What the guys did, they used to put the badges onto the rag jackets, and they fall off, so you have to replace them. But I've got some really nice we were dancing in Monmouth many years ago, and there was a New Zealand couple there, and this New Zealand guy was asking us about the Morris, and he said, don't go away. And he gave me a silver, a fern, a silver fern of New Zealand. I've got badges from other sides, where they've said, Chris, have one of these. That you just collect them. Usually they have a memory of somewhere you've been.
Yeah.
They're not just random.
There's a significance.
I remember getting that from Southport, or I remember getting that from Newcastle, or the other thing we have on the rag jackets is we've got bits of lace from the ladies' lacy bits that they've cut off, that we've pinned on. Yeah, one of the places we went to, we regularly went to, I don't know if we've been for a few years yet, was a village in Brittany called Pont-Aven, and they have a festival, and the Bretons are famous for Breton lace, so you're wandering through the street and there's the gorgeous lace costumes, and they would just cut bits of lace off their costumes and give them to us, and so of course we then attach them to our jackets.
Yeah, how come there were so many festivals like in Europe? Because I view Morris as a thing.
Yeah. No, I'm not talking about Morris. I'm talking about just folk festivals.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, the one that the Pont-Aven connection, that was a pure. This was before my time. One year they decided that they would hire a coach and go to Brittany on holiday as a Morris side. And they would go with their kit, and they would, if they got to a town, they would ask to find out the local mairie, and they would say, can we dance? And invariably they would allow them to dance. And one of the towns they went to, they said, are you going to be here this weekend? Because they were there on a Wednesday, for example. So they said, are you going to be here this weekend? And they said, yeah. Will you come back and join us at our festival, please? And we had a standing invitation. So they had a standing invitation then that any time they wanted to, they just needed to send a letter to this village, this town in Pontavenn, this town called Pontavenn in southern Brittany, and they would get invited to their festival. And their festival was all about Breton. It was a Breton festival. It was called the Festival of the Golden Gorse. That was the English translation. I can't remember what the French stroke Breton was, but they would invite folk groups from all over France, in fairness, from all over the world. So in there we danced with German people, we danced with Caribbean, we danced with all sorts of people, and just kept getting invited back.
Sounds like great fun.
Oh, it was great fun. Absolutely marvellous. And in fact, I enjoyed it so much, we eventually bought a cottage in Brittany. And we had a cottage there for 16 odd years.
Brilliant. It must be nice as well to connect with people who are involved in different folk customs.
Yes.
Like,
yeah.
Doesn't feel so
yes,
isolated.
It is. I mean, one of the ones that stands in my memory is we were invited up to what was called a folk moot up in Newcastle. This was about 84, and what the folk moot was all about was inviting folk dancers traditions from all over the world. So we represented the Cotswold Morris. There was the Earlsdon Northwest Clog dancers. They represented Northwest Clog. There were Rapperside, Swordsides. There were Indian, as in the Indian subcontinent dancers. There were who actually came from Nottingham, I discovered. Sides from all over the world. Some of them were British, but they were dancing traditions that were from their ancestry. I'm trying to think of one of the ones that we. No, it's gone. It's gone. Yeah, such is life. But that was probably one of the best ones. That was a fantastic weekend. A hell of a long way to drive for a weekend, but it was worth it.
Yeah, miles away.
Yes.
But yeah, it must be nice to feel just bigger of
well, it was. Yeah,
bigger than
absolutely,
that. Yeah.
Absolutely tremendous.
Brilliant. What else have I got? Back to the costumes for a minute.
Yeah, okay.
Who makes them?
My wife.
Is that generally the case then? That it's...
Well, no. I mean, sometimes some of the Morris dancers don't have wives.
Yeah.
So they do it themselves. Or they get their mothers to do it. There are some. So I'm thinking of Saddleworth have a very specific dress, and they have that specially made. There's another Cotswold side that is a very specific, you can't make this, you have to have it made for you, but they have a place where it's made, and when you finish, you hand it back. And when you grow out of it, which sadly a lot of us do grow out, we grow in not height, definitely in width.
It's all the good cake.
But yeah, I was oh yeah, the other stuff, we white shirts, all sorts of different coloured shirts, shirts with collars, shirts without collars. They have, some of them have baldricks. Do you know what a baldrick is? It's a ribbon that you wear across your, some of them have baldricks, some have braces, some have baldricks and braces. Some have leather waistcoats, some have standard waistcoats, some have short jackets. There are as many, many different costumes as there are different sides. There's no two the same.
Yeah, and they must evolve over time.
Yeah, I think they did, because I think when the Forest of Dean set off back in the 60s, they wore yellow socks. I think they wore yellow socks for 1 year. Then they went to white socks. But there's still a couple of guys who were there at the beginning, and they can remember the yellow socks with not too fond memories, because you find yellow socks, football socks as well. Right, ask me another.
What else we got? I think we're getting close to being able to kind of wrap this up.
Okay.
I kind of want to ask you about a little bit about the future of Morris. You mentioned already bringing women into Morris sides. Where do you see Morris dancing going in the future? Or what would you like to see?
I'd like it to carry on as it is. But I'm not going to be a pessimist. It will carry on, because it's always carried on. It's survived history. It's whenever it started. I mean, there are references to it in Shakespeare. So that's what, 500 years? So it's been there's 500 years of documentation. I'm hoping that it will continue. I can see no reason why it shouldn't, so long as there are individuals that want to do it. How they change, I have no idea. I don't know, because I'm not a clairvoyant. I don't know. I just hope it carries on. I think it will.
Yeah.
I hope it will. I think it would be we would be in a sadder place if it didn't.
Yeah, and you mentioned earlier when we weren't recording that you're still trying to be involved.
Oh yeah,
in any way.
I mean, there are what I used to call groupies, people who are there on the fringes but never get involved, other than will be there if you need to pick up plates, if you need to clear a space for the dancers to do their bit. That's always been the case, and long may that remain so, because you have to have a certain je ne sais quoi, I don't know what that is, to be able to do it. I mean, I don't understand why more dancers don't want to do what I'm doing now.
Is that rare then, do you think?
No, it's common that they don't want to talk about it.
Oh.
It's like the first thing you do in Fight Club is you don't talk about Fight Club.
Do you think people really feel really protective of it then?
They feel protective, but whether they don't understand the significance, or whether I'm overthinking it, I don't know. But I think it's really important that we keep our traditions. I think it's desperately important. These traditions, we've lost so many. Let's not lose this one.
Yeah, and because it's the history of normal people. It's not written down in the books.
No, it's not written down. It wasn't written down. And I suppose because it wasn't written down. But every generation, somebody will pick something up. Somebody will add something. I mean, I'm going to blow my own trumpet now. Many years ago, I'd been dancing probably 5 or 6 years. And one of the biggest frustrations that I had is that you would go on a day's dancing, and whilst you had enough people to dance, you would say, right, six men for such and such a dance. And you'd be there with five men going, where's the sixth? Come on, let's have a... And four or five of them would be in a queue to get ice creams. And that frustrated the devil out of me. And I was at Fools and Animals Do up in Wath-on-Dearne, which was my breath of fresh air every year. And we used to perform, the fools used to gather and they would dance. Well, they wouldn't dance. They would dance and they wouldn't dance. They would create havoc for the Wath-on-Dearne men. And bless them, they were a really good bunch of lads with Wath-on-Dearne. But this particular time, we couldn't get a side together. They couldn't get a side together. So we said, well, we'll do it. Because even though we all knew each other, some of us didn't know each other, but because the Cotswold tradition is, you can actually buy a book. And if you can understand it, you can actually follow. There is a book that was produced. So certain dances are common. Mm. So everybody does certain dances. And and you know what? We dance really well. And I took this idea and I thought, I wonder if we get seven blokes. That's six men for a side and a spare and a musician. So that's eight blokes altogether. And I used blokes because it was...
At the time, yeah.
At the time I was a Morris man as opposed to a Morris dancer. And I approached one of the guys who used to come to the June Festival. And I said, I've had this idea. What do you think? And I said, we go somewhere on a Friday night... We will learn six dances from a single tradition. All right. So we're dependent on the musician knowing the six tunes, and we're dependent on a foreman knowing how to teach the six dances. And then we only have seven men, so there's only one spare, because to dance without, if somebody twists their ankle or anything like that. And we went, we had our first dance out in the Shropshire area. We stayed at a place called the Rising Sun in Clun. The Sun at Clun, wasn't the Rising Sun. It was the Sun at Clun. And we managed to cobble a kit together. So we had white trousers, white shirts, couple of... Oh, Pip.
That's bad.
Just let her go out.
Where is that?
She's just let one go.
That is awful.
Oh, you. Bloody dog. Oh, it's making my eyes water.
Oh, no.
I said, so we had the first one. We managed to get eight blokes, a musician, and seven dancers. We learnt a tradition, I can't remember which one it was now, on the Friday night, and we danced one day, and we called ourselves the One Day Wonders.
Brilliant.
One Day Wonders. And then when we finished doing that day's dance, we did six stands with six dances each, so we danced, did a lot of dancing. And at the end of the day, we were absolutely exhausted, but we all had smiles on our faces. And we said, shall we do this again? Yeah, okay. They managed to continue going for 30 years. I left them after about seven. A number of other people came in and went out, but there were four dancers who were there at the first one, were there at the last one, but they eventually had eight dancers because they were getting so old that they couldn't keep, honest to God, a couple of them were in their early 70s when they finished, but still fit 70-year-olds. And they decided after 30 years that they would stop. So they stopped, and they did more or less the same tour that we did the first time. I went up there with Ruth and followed them all the way around. And then they stopped. And this is them. This is the One Day Wonders.
Oh,
so that's a very basic kit that's slightly different from what we had the first time round, because we were there sewing. We were sewing bells on pads. The braces were not these braces. And so they stopped. That was their last one. That was on May the 13th in 2017. All right, so that was their last dance. And the four originals were this guy here, Tony, Joe, Dave, and there should be another Dave on there. Oh, there he is.
Dave.
Another Dave. Martin. Oh. I'll call him Dave, but his name's Martin. Yeah, so there was those were the four originals. So they stopped, and then about 12 months after they finished, I had a phone call from Dave's son, that Dave there, and he said, "Chris, can we start the One Day Wonders again?" I said, "Brilliant." I thought it was nice that he would even ask me. He said, "Can we have the one?" He said, "Do you mind?" And they've just had their third dance out, with the 2-year break for COVID, so that's 5 years on, and they're wearing the same kit, the same principle: meet on a Friday, dance on a Saturday, go home, and then 12 months time.
Oh,
wonderful!
Brilliant.
That's Morris.
Yeah.
That is Morris. That is what it's all. That is as close to traditional Morris as you will ever get, so far as I'm concerned. Can you see how excited I am?
Yeah, it's brilliant. It's great. Oh, that's impressive that they did it for so long.
For 30
as well.
Years. I mean, unfortunately, there's at least, of the original eight, four of them are no longer with us in real terms. That was pure Morris. That was absolutely as it should be.
Fantastic.